Buongiorno a tutti. I'm Matteo Bonetti, joined by Mina Rizzucchi and Nikki Bandini. And coming up on the latest edition of Serie Awesome, we'll talk about the crazy situation unfolding in Milano with Inter. It wasn't La Dea's day in Madrid as Benzema and company knocked out Gasperini's men out of the Champions League. A similar story happened to Lazio. Inter take a 9-point lead at the top of the table. And we ask if Milan are in danger of dropping out of the top four and whether it's top four or bust for Fonseca and what the future holds for Cristiano Ronaldo. But first, we have to talk about the breaking news from Italy, and that revolves around Inter and their match against Sassuolo being postponed until at least April 7th. The local health authorities in Lombardy have intervened to suspend Inter's training for 4 days, which includes their weekend match against Sassuolo. This comes after positive COVID cases to Matias Vecino, Danilo D'Ambrosio, Samir Handanovic, and Steven De Vrij. Nikki, what do you make of all this?
I make that some things, even though we're here to give our footballing takes, are kind of not built for giving a take around. This is a decision taken by a local health authority. It's a decision taken by someone whose responsibility sits outside of football. People may agree with it. People may disagree with it. I 100% can understand and relate to supporters looking at a situation and going, well, this isn't fair. We played this game without however many players. We had to do this game and we were missing more than four players. Four is not that high a number compared to what some teams have put up with at different times this season. I think the only thing that I just always want to reinforce with these decisions, though, is it's not Inter who've made these decisions. I would argue, actually, if you wanted to sort of get into the conspiracies side of it, like, I don't think this is a good time for Inter to miss this game. Sassuolo have actually played a postponed game in midweek themselves because of a game that got delayed as a result of a COVID outbreak. They have a tight run of fixtures. And yes, De Vrij is important, Handanovic is important, but I'm not certain that this is that catastrophic for you as a team that you would necessarily think it's better to have fixture congestion later. In any case, that is conjecture. It's not Inter who've made this decision. It's come from the local health authority. And at time of recording, we don't have a ruling from the footballing authority on what happens here. Of course, we have some not very straightforward or clear precedent that has been set by previous examples this season, most obviously the first one, the Juventus-Napoli game that got ruled as a 3-0 win for Juventus, then after several rounds of appeal got overturned and ordered to be replayed. So we don't know for certain where this one will end up yet. But again, this isn't a football decision that's been made so far. It's a health authority decision. And there's only so much I can say about that, really.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you look at previous games this season where this happened, and there's always these conspiracy theorists, Nikki, and I think you kind of touched upon that, which is really frustrating, given that this has literally nothing to do with, oh, let's help Inter try to win the Scudetto. That is just clickbait nonsense. This is a third wave right now that we're seeing in Italy. The situation of COVID there at the moment is a disaster. There's four cases. They tested the whole team. And it's hard for me to criticize any local health authority or team for a once-in-a-lifetime, hopefully once-in-a-lifetime, epidemic that has been absolutely ravaging the country. And honestly, I think that it's absolute nonsense to try to point at, oh, there's favoritism. No, this is a country trying to figure out how to deal with a situation that simply never happened before. So we will see if the game does actually get rescheduled for April 7th, but that is the current date that's been set, although it isn't set in stone. Let's move, though, to Champions League talk. And Atalanta getting knocked out by Real Madrid, Mina, and it feels like it was a two-legged affair that was really summarized and really affected by what happened in the first leg with Atalanta picking up that early red card.
Yeah, I do think that it's interesting because at the time of watching the first leg, I was so convinced that that wasn't a red card, and more I've started to go and think, maybe that was a great opportunity for Ferland Mendy. I know the ability that he has on the ball. You know, I don't think it was going out, so perhaps it was a red card. Either way, it doesn't really matter. At the end of the day, I think that the difference was is that Zidane is very accomplished when it comes to Champions League games. He doesn't have a team that was right now outstanding, but he does have a midfield that has the experience required to overcome matches like this. I think they really played a wonderfully tactical game just by inserting Isco in the first leg. I know there was a lot of criticism of the way that Real Madrid handled this, but they knew exactly how to take the zip out of Atalanta's game. Second leg, I still felt like Atalanta had a great chance to do something special, but it just wasn't them. I just didn't see Atalanta's energy or that ability. I was disappointed in Ilicic when he was on. I feel like this team is missing something. That on the ball movement that they had perhaps with Papu that makes a difference in these
something
types of matches.
Or someone.
Yeah, it is. This is what I mean. Where these are the matches in which you can see the difference between quality and just a lot of energy. And I think that they were missing that level of quality that Papu would bring to Atalanta in these types of matches that he brought last season. You know. So I think that was the difference. I'm disappointed because, like I said, I don't think this is a great Real Madrid. I think it's still a very good Real Madrid by all, you know, by every stretch of the imagination. I mean, look at Modric. I mean, the guy's a king, right? Benzema's just wonderful to watch. He's my absolute favorite striker in the world. So when you look at all that, it's fine. But I would have just liked Atalanta to have at least produced a performance worthy of their capabilities. And sadly, I didn't see that.
Yeah, I thought there was sort of a broad brush analysis that I saw after all of the Italian teams went out from Fabio Capello, who I know you're a big fan of, Mina, and look, who has much more authority to speak on matters of tactics probably than any of us. Look, he's been the manager of some very successful teams. I thought he made some criticisms of Italian football in very broad brushstrokes, saying that the game in Italy has been played too slow and it's too tactical and there's not enough of the togetherness and pace in the game that he sees in other teams. And I thought to myself, even accepting some of that analysis, Atalanta absolutely were a team that played at pace and that got into you, and you couldn't say that they, you know, not even against teams like Man City, looked like they were this slow team and was plodding. But in this two-legged tie, they were made to look slow. And I think that's more of a tribute to Real Madrid than perhaps they've been given credit for in some places. And perhaps it is also a demerit, I guess, for Gasperini, who I don't think got things right in this game. He got one very, very good free kick routine right, which was fun to see at the end of that second
half.
But Atalanta looked surprisingly toothless and surprisingly just lacking energy, I thought. Like, there's one thing you expect from that team, and I think we saw it even when they lost to Inter recently, it's that they're going to have tempo. They're going to have a commitment to trying things, and it didn't feel like they had any of that in these two legs, and I think that was the biggest shame of them going out. There's no shame for me, even if, as you say, Mina, not the best Real Madrid of recent years, there's no shame for me in Atalanta going out to Real Madrid. The reality is those clubs are very different. I think it's a shame, globally speaking, that we didn't see, I guess, some more of that sense of fun and adventure that we have got used to seeing from Atalanta in this tie.
Yeah, and I think Mina touched upon it with mentioning Papu Gomez. Everyone's saying, oh, look, Atalanta, they're totally fine without Papu Gomez. They're this more workmanlike team with Pessina and all these players that, yeah, that's fine when you're playing mid-table and lower-table teams in Serie A, but when you're playing Real Madrid and it's the quality that gets you to the next round, the individual brilliance, the ability to pull something out of nothing. They had that with Josip Ilicic, who hasn't played as consistently this season, but Papu Gomez was so often their inspiration in big moments in Europe. You know, he scored such great goals. He's someone who can dismantle a defense on his own. And when he goes missing, you suddenly see a team that is very workmanlike, that has lost a bit of that X factor that they had in the past. And I think Mina brought it up perfectly, that you could see the absence so clearly of Papu Gomez in this game against Real Madrid, and also how unlucky Atalanta were that in the first leg, when they were playing a dismantled Real Madrid with Isco as a false nine, that's when they had that early red card. Because in the second leg, suddenly Sergio Ramos was back. I know Casemiro was out, but it didn't really matter. Karim Benzema led the line, who's been one of Real Madrid's best performers. So not good news for Italian teams in general. We saw Lazio getting knocked out by Bayern Munich, where Bayern Munich didn't even make it close. They absolutely blew it away in the first leg. And then, of course, Juventus, which I think leads us perfectly to our next point, which is what happens with Cristiano Ronaldo? He was a player that was signed for the Champions League that they felt, okay, we've been to the Champions League final twice without that once-in-a-generation type superstar leading the line. They were beaten by better teams both times in the Champions League final in the last decade. So, Mina, do you think that this is ultimately what affects Cristiano Ronaldo, whether he does stay another year or whether he does find new pastures? It seems like Fabio Paratici, the sporting director, has come out and said that Ronaldo is going to stay. But then there's all rumors floating around in Madrid. I think even Zidane mentioned, you know, maybe it is true that Cristiano Ronaldo is someone that that may come back for a second stint at Real Madrid. Where do you put his future?
I'm sorry, I will just answer this question, but I do want to just make a quick point because that's who I am and I have to make a quick point. just on the topic of Italians and the way they've been knocked out of the Champions League and the Spaniards, in fact, because I think both countries have not really had amazing teams. I do think that they're two countries that rely a lot on mental tension and motivation. And I do think that they are countries that depend on having sort of spectators available because their style of football is perhaps more tactical or technical or whatever it is. And I think that that's missing in their game. Ronaldo, like you've mentioned, is somebody who really loves being abused. And the fact that he was insulted after that performance against Porto was perhaps why he scored a hat-trick against Cagliari. He loves people doubting him. Ibrahimovic loves it too. Italians and Spaniards need, you know, Lazio would have needed the whole of the Olimpico behind them to feel that they can take on Bayern. By all means, you know, they were never going to win that match, even if they had, you know, the whole of Italy supporting them, because it is Bayern who just, you know, won a, like so much in football. But I do feel like sometimes the tension is missing. And when you are facing the Bundesliga and, you know, the English sides that have actually rely a lot more on perhaps on athleticism and different types of getting the wins, they don't perhaps rely so much on the things that Italians and Spaniards do. And I wonder if that's what's making the difference right now. You know, the fact that Real Madrid are just playing in their training ground and it's not the Bernabeu, if there is this lack of tension that's making the difference, if Atalanta don't feel the glorious journey that they were feeling last season. But either way, there was a lot of that as well, not played in front of spectators. When it comes to Ronaldo, I think that there's a sporting agenda and then there's obviously a financial agenda. And that's not just for Juventus. I think that's for him as well. I think on a sporting level, it probably would make sense for him to go back to Real Madrid because they're missing a superstar and he is missing a midfield, frankly speaking. And I think together with Real Madrid, they can he can take them back to the heights that they were, you know, they remember. And Juventus could start from scratch by building the way that they know how. Having said all of these things, there are financial benefits to being in Italy. One of them is, of course, you know, trying to make sure like Italy had changed their tax laws to stop the brain drain, to ensure that, you know, teams or sort of rather businessmen or people coming back to Italy wouldn't pay a lot of money on their tax. And I think that that saves him a lot of money. This is a man who makes so much money from commercial merchandising, from his fame, from where he is. And that helps him to live in Italy right now because he doesn't have to pay too much tax on it. And I think the fact is he did come out on Instagram. He did talk about Juventus going forward. For me, I feel like it's one more season that he's probably willing to give because I don't think that he thinks it's going to be over for him in one more season. So he thinks, I'll give it one more season. I'm happy where I am. My family is happy where I am. And then I'll move forward. I think all because on a financial level, it makes sense to him and Juventus. It may not make sense to on a sporting level.
I can't say that you're wrong, Mina, because I don't know. I sort of want to hope that Ronaldo is not making his decisions all on financial grounds because I'm sure
no,
he's earned
I don't think
enough.
So, but I think
and he's got,
yeah, he's got, no, of course.
He's got an opportunity that is, no matter how much faith he has in his own health, it is not an unlimited window to keep winning things. And you would like to hope as a, and I think I believe as a competitor, he wants to keep winning things. It's a, look, it's a complicated, it's a thorny situation, I think, for everyone now. to sort of put the context out there, we did sort of have this week of report and counter report where some of the newspapers in Spain started to say, well, hey, Ronaldo wants out, he's not happy. And then some of the newspapers in Italy were mooting whether or not Ronaldo was still right for the project. And Paratici, of course, came out before Juventus played at the weekend and said, basically, it's all rubbish and Ronaldo's future is here and we're planning for a future with Ronaldo. Now, of course, future is a word that can cover a lot of different things. I don't think anyone is talking about anything beyond this last year of his contract. But even this last year of his contract, from where I'm sitting, it is becoming a complicated picture. I do think you've got a team that is trying to shift to a new identity. And again, I feel like I really want to be as clear as I can every time I say this. It's not about saying that Ronaldo is not still a world-class talent, because he is. But is he a world-class talent that fits into this current idea of a team you're trying to build? And so far, I haven't seen it in a way that convinces me. I think we might have another awkward year of the two concepts rubbing against each other. And I don't know that that's going to help Juventus in the short term to win the Champions League. And if it's not helping you to do that, then why are you doing it? But then the other side of that, part of why you're doing it is because the other angle on what you're just talking about, Mina, the finances, who's going to come along right now in the middle of this pandemic when football finances are being squeezed so, so tight, and A, give Ronaldo the deal that he's going to want, and B, give Juventus the financial out that they want from this last year of his contract? I can't see it happening myself, because I don't look around Europe and see who would do that. I mean, the only club that I can think is in the financial position to be that confident right now is a club like PSG. And I mean, can you imagine Ronaldo going there with Neymar and Mbappe? Would be fun, but I don't see it happening. So I think they are married together for another season, personally. I don't know that that's a good thing, though, for either party, because I think that Ronaldo might well, there might well be another club out there that would better suit the football that he can give them at this point of his career.
Right. It's more to do with the midfield, though, right? When you yeah, say sure. that, you know, maybe he isn't part of the project, I think that he can be part of any sort of project as long as the players around him or behind him, more than anything, are competent in their roles. You can still have a youth project. I mean, just look at over the weekend, it was the first time that you saw Chiesa, Kulusevski, Ronaldo, Morata all together. There's still Dybala, who hasn't played. I mean, there's so much talent up front, but it's such an unbalanced side that was, in the end, based on what we've seen, I mean, look, three consecutive seasons knocked out. They do well in the group stage, and then they get knocked out against Ajax, against Lyon, against Porto. Of course, Ronaldo's not going to be happy, because he knows. He knows the reason why he was brought in, to give them that final hump over the finish line when they were getting to the end under Max Allegri, who brought them to the Champions League final twice. And it hasn't happened, but they haven't even been close. And you never looked at them and said, you know what? Yeah, that's a top three side in Europe.
You know, this is what annoys me. It's like everything that I used to read about Ronaldo before he arrived at Juventus was that everyone had to get his okay before we did anything, because he was the king of everything that he surveyed. But I don't think he's that person at all. He's actually just a nice guy who plays good football. He hasn't demanded anything. If I was Ronaldo right now, I would have walked into Paratici's office and be like, what is this midfield that you've handed me? You want me to be at my best with this kind of team that you have? And now you're chasing players like Gosens? Are you being serious? Let me do a disclaimer here. It's not because I don't think Gosens is a wonderful, wonderful player. But again, it's Juventus love to buy players that are brilliant off the ball and none that are great on it. And I've just had enough of building a team full of runners, but nobody who actually wants to take possession of the ball and distribute it. So what are we going to do? Are we just going to blow the whistle and everyone just runs forward at Juventus? And then who's going to pass them the ball? Bonucci? Because right now, the way that they are, even the people that they're being linked to, it makes me so angry, because I just feel they have absolutely no understanding of tactical balance, what is required to make a team. Who is passing the ball to Morata, Kulusevski, Chiesa? None of them know how to play the ball. The one guy who does is Dybala, who has been suffering from injuries for the last 15 years. And, you know, at the end of the day, like, I mean, you have Pjanic who did it. We have Arthur. now, but he can only really play short passes. He doesn't trust himself with long passes. And we're just still being linked to be players that know who had a run off the ball, but do very little with it on it. And then you look at like games against Crotone, and they think, oh, if we just keep delivering boxes, crosses into the box. No, you need players who know how to do a quick exchange. You need to know, you need players who know how to tie in together and play together in the final third. There is none of that because they are all runners. They're all finalizers. So this is what irritates me so much, because once again, they are looking to sell Ramsey. They're looking to sell Alexandro, players who perhaps a little bit more comfortable on the ball. By all means, I do want Ramsey out. You know, don't question me about that. But Rabiot, all these guys all just want to run and then deliver me the ball. Who's passing the ball? This is what irritates me about all of this. So if I was Ronaldo, you know, I want a sporting project. I'm going into that and I'm actually throwing my weight around, because you brought me in to win the Champions League. Help me win the Champions League. Paratici needs to go out. I don't know who needs to go out, or somebody needs to learn how to actually tactically balance this. And I'm saying this as someone who's never played the game. I do not understand how no one is seeing this at Juventus right now.
I mean, I do think it's, I feel like we've got this far into conversation that someone needs to mention that, because we haven't, Ronaldo played brilliantly and Juventus thrashed Cagliari the weekend. So I want to stress that as well, because I was the one sort of raising the question whether or not he fits with this team. There's no question that Ronaldo has done a dominant job in Serie A. He's currently Serie A's top scorer. He has not been like, I really want to stress so that no one is listening to this and thinking that I'm here suggesting that he hasn't done good things for Juventus. He's been brilliant for Juventus most weeks in Serie A, at least. I thought he was disappointing in isolation in that second leg against Porto when you wanted something from him. He didn't show up, and that is a frustration. But I don't think he's been... Most weeks he's brilliant. He really is. And he still has that to give you as a team. And, you know, I'm not with some people who I see banging the drum very loudly who thinks this title race is over quite yet. I think with this Ronaldo, it's not done yet. Yeah. It's just, for me, the question with him at that team is just still, he doesn't press. He will do so much for you, but he does not press. And if you want to be that team, you don't have to be that team. Make a different team. Be a different tactical identity and he can fit. But if you want to be the team that I see Pirlo trying to make, which is a high-pressing team, I don't think he's the perfect fit.
And over the weekends...
But I think that's, I'm sorry, just a really quick point, but this is the issue with Italy. Cassano has mentioned it, Giorgio Chiellini has mentioned it. Pep Guardiola is brilliant for football, but he's ruined football because of all the sycophants that try to copy what he does. Everyone playing out from the back, no matter what it does, whatever the goal conceded by Atalanta, the goal conceded by Juventus. It's like, we've all got to play Guardiola's football, even if we have Giorgio Chiellini and Demiral at the back, we still have to play Pep Guardiola's football, who had ball players at the back. Like, understand what you have. Pragmatism isn't defensive, it's intelligence. It's doing what you can with what you have. So right now, when you see Pioli actually managing something against United, it's because he seems to have a brain at the moment that is reliant a little bit on pragmatism. Juventus succeeded under Allegri. Pragmatism works. That is not a dirty word in football. We don't all have to play out from the back. Create your own tactical revolution. But sadly, we have Enrico Sacchi, who writes a column every day about what a modern coach is, which is sadly not purely in his eyes, but now he's bewildered by the fact that this guy is doing so well. And this is a shame that's happening to Italy right now, because this is what's causing the problems that we have. And I have absolved Pirlo from problems, because management is the one that deserves this. But at the end of the day, we can't all play this type of football when you have Ronaldo up front and Demiral at the back or whoever it is. Change to the players you have. Otherwise, accept losses continuously.
Mina, I thought that you were going to go on to actually praise Conte, because you're attacking managers who copy Pep Guardiola. And we've actually done that on the show. You think of, like, you know, even De Zerbi, right? At Sassuolo, everyone's like, oh, he's a genius because he concedes 4 goals a game. And Liverani, who only brings teams down to Serie B, but he attacks. He's great. He's this modern tactical mind. But look at where Inter are. Inter play a very different style of football. Look at where Max Allegri's Juventus were, where Max Allegri was someone who could adapt to the opposition, who didn't have all guns blazing like the managers that Juventus tried to bring back before. And it just feels like there is a style that can work still in modern football. If everyone played the same, football would be boring. I love having the Diego Simeones and the Jose Mourinhos and Antonio Conte. So anyway, it's hashtag bring back and free Catenaccio. I think we can start this one on Twitter. And just really quickly, you could tell that Cristiano Ronaldo has been bothered, because even over the weekend in his first half hat trick against Cagliari after one of the goals, he points to his ear as if he's been hearing the criticism. And he says, this is what I can still do. Anyway, Juventus take on Benevento this weekend and should be favored. And who knows, maybe even a late Scudetto push. Good news for all the Zlatan fans. He's back in training after being out since February 28th after the win against Roma. He scored 14 goals in only 14 matches this season. And even more news coming out of the Zlatan camp, it's that he has announced his return to the Swedish national team. And Jan Andersson also confirmed that he is planning to include Ibra in the European Championship this summer. Aren't we all so lucky? Not a great situation, though, at Milan, where they lost over the weekend against Napoli. And that means that right now, Milan are closer to fifth spot than they are the Scudetto after being top of the table for more than half the season. So I'm going to ask both of you, are Milan now suddenly at risk of losing out on the top four? I can't even believe we're talking about it, but hey, it's mathematically possible.
Yeah, I don't think it's that sudden, to be honest. I think it's been creeping that way. I don't think they will. That's my opinion. But I don't think it's at all beyond the realms of possibility. And here's a really awkward part of it that comes around, I suppose, every season, but feels very prominent this season, because I think Roma are having exactly the same problem. The Europa League is hurting them. I think the performances that we saw from both Milan and Roma coming off of those Europa League games just looked tired. And Milan, as we've talked about extensively, have been having this situation for a while of too many starters missing, thinner and thinner resources. Pioli has done this incredible job finding sofas, finding players behind the sofa, behind the back of the fridge, wherever he can find someone else and get another performance out of them. And by the way, we were talking about Italian clubs not being up to it in Europe. Well, I do think if Milan beat Manchester United, who, by the way, are not far off the top of the Premier League table, it's not something to ignore just because it's not in the Champions League. But I think that the schedule is not in their favour right now. I think that's hurting them. And you lose a game against a direct rival like Napoli for those top four spots. There are a cluster of teams going for those top four spots. I still think Milan are way ahead of, in my mind certainly, ahead of Roma, ahead of Napoli. I think that ahead of Lazio, I think that there's a group they're ahead of, but are not untouchable to. I think Juventus and Inter, it's very hard to see those two dropping out. But you add all of the teams I just mentioned, Lazio are also in that picture. It's not a done deal. And Milan's results recently have been poor. If you just looked in isolation at the recent results, you'd say they've been poor. If you looked at performances recently, you would say, gosh, there's too many players who aren't quite on it. Even players who I really like Frank Kessié, in my opinion, has not been playing at the levels that he was earlier this season, which is understandable. I think Theo, when he's been there, has been way below what he's been at his best. And certain players' absences have been felt really hard. And I'm not just talking about Ibrahimovic there. I think some of the less obvious ones, like Calabria, when he's not been there, have been really quite felt. There are problems at Milan. I don't think they're unsolvable. I do think they will be in the top four at the end of the season, but that's me saying what I think will happen, not something that is certain to happen, because the gap is now nowhere near big enough to say, oh yes, they're definitely going to finish the top four, in my opinion.
Yeah, and it's really good news, though, that Ibrahimovic is coming back, because Ante Rebic also got suspended for 2 games based on what he said against the referee, which we saw, got the confirmation with the lip syncing. Can't repeat it on this podcast. I think he deserves every single minute of that suspension. You simply cannot rely on someone who loses his head like that. The fact that Rafael Leao as well, you never know what you're going to get from him when he leads the line. He's not really a striker, but he's too inconsistent to be trusted upon week by week. So without Zlatan Ibrahimovic and players like Ismail Benacer, I feel like we're seeing this weakness now of Milan, which is a team that in the end is the youngest team in Serie A, that doesn't have players who have ever done it consistently over the course of a season. And it reminds me so much of what happened to Lazio when the schedule got congested and when the injuries started creeping up and the COVID cases, they went back to reality, which was a team that simply did not have the depth to compete with the likes of Juventus and Inter. And right now, it very much does feel like Inter and Juve will be the top two in the table.
But I do think that the difference with Lazio, I felt that it was more of a mental breakdown as opposed to what I feel is happening with Milan. Now, I think that in Italy, we have this notion of it doesn't matter. Like, you know, you have to just overcome. Your name is Milan, your name is Juventus, your name is Inter. You overcome any obstacle and every obstacle, and we never talk about it because your name is huge. But I do think that when you're playing without six starters against Manchester United in a game you should have won, because frankly, Kessié's goal should have stood, yeah, then I do think that there comes a point where absences matter. It makes a difference. This is the side who, if they didn't have Pioli and his tactical ability to change and morph and try to bring in different players and try to, like Nikki said, find them from out the surfer and do something special with them, I don't think that they would have been in the top four at all, considering all the massive absences that they've had this season. But at the end of the day, Pioli said something, and he's always so well-spoken. He never tries to blame anything or anyone. He just said, you know, at the end of the day, take Lukaku and Lautaro out of Inter. Take Chiesa and Ronaldo out of Juventus. And I'm sorry, but you would have all understood why these teams were suffering. Inter haven't really had these massive absences, you know, to deal with. And Juventus have had Ronaldo for most of the season. So I do think that when you're without Ibrahimovic and you're without Mandzukic and you're without Benacer, that's taking out like your Barella, that's taking out your Lukaku, that's taking out your, you know, it's a lot. It's a lot for them to have to deal with and constantly play in Europa League and actually be the only shining light right now alongside Roma in European football right now. And actually match United and perhaps even did better than them, I would say, you know. So I do think that there comes a point where we do have to say, I'm really sorry you're going through this and you've done an exceptionally great job despite it, you know. And I don't think we have to constantly say, well, it's Milan and they overcome. They do have squad depth. They do have a lot of attackers, but not of the same level. So on that, I'm still really proud of them. And I still think if they just get a few of them, Benacer is coming back, you know, then perhaps... No, my money is that they'll still make top four because you know what? They're the most tactically versatile squad there is and they deserve it.
So Gennaro Gattuso beat Milan at San Siro to blow the race for the top four wide open and allowed Inter to go 9 points clear. Since the loss against Atalanta and the inconsistency that we saw from Napoli before that, feels like they've turned a corner, right, Nikki?
I'm loath to say with Napoli because sometimes I feel like they turn a corner and then they turn another corner right away as soon as you say something about them. It was a good performance. I think it was a win that was probably more comfortable than the scoreline might make it look. I thought Napoli were the better team and they've delivered in some of these big games really well, actually. And it's interesting because I know that's something that was talked about on this show is the mental robustness of this side in certain big games. But look, I mean, the last couple of months, they beat Juventus when they had to. They beat Milan when they had to. They have actually come up really well in these big games. And I think that one player in particular who we probably haven't talked about enough on this show, Piotr Zieliński, has been sensational for at least the last 5 or 6 weeks. I mean, he's good. He's been good for several seasons, but I think he's been as good as I've seen him in the last period. And I think that's definitely in the category of player that when we're talking about the deficiencies in some of the other big clubs in Italy right now, someone who is right in the middle of the team and running the show, there's not many who do it as well as he does. And I'm not just talking about the beautiful assists, the beautiful goals. He's really running the show at the moment. Had a obviously a gorgeous assist on the goal against Milan. That was just a wonderful piece of aggressive, direct counter-attacking football that all stems from his side jumping on. Trying to think which Milan player it was that his side pounced on and took the ball off him. But everything about that was such sharpness from Napoli. And I think there was a contrast there, actually, because when the ball first comes to Zielinski, because he has more than one involvement in the play that leads up to the goal, it's Kessié who's trying to close him down, and it's Kessié who's coming at him as fast as he can. He can't quite get there. And that was one of those moments that made me think it's not a damning judgment of Kessié, because I think Kessié is another brilliant footballer, but he has been trying to carry so much at Milan without Benassé alongside him. That half step, would he have been sharper earlier this season? Would he have made that challenge? I mean, I'm speculating, but that's what it felt like to watch. Whereas Zielinski is in his zone right now, and it's making such a difference to Napoli.
So, Mina, we have to talk about your favorite manager and team, hashtag Free Catenaccio. Antonio Conte's Inter picked up a 2-1 win over Torino, and it felt like second half, Christian Eriksen, much better team when he's on, which we would have probably never said 4 months ago, given the form. But the general consensus that I feel when I watch Inter, especially in the last 4 or 5 months, is that it feels like they always find a way to win. Do you agree with this, Mina?
Yeah, I don't necessarily think that they play this fantastic football. You know, when we were talking about pragmatism and you mentioned Antonio Conte, I do think, yes, he would probably be considered more of that of a pragmatist than he is certainly a philosopher. But it's also he has this idea of football, which is always, you know, out wide, into the box, you know, need a guy up front that can, you know, fight for it. And to me, he is a philosopher, just a bad one. Oh God, that sounds
but can't you be a philosopher playing, like, he identified the perfect striker for his system.
Yes,
the
he knows exactly
duo,
what
the
he
perfect
needs.
Midfielder. I mean, Barella, amazing signing. Lukaku, the most ideal striker to play in Conte's formation. He's actually been incredible with picking out some of the players. I know not all of them have worked. The experience that Vidal and Kolarov were supposed to bring, that's been a big flop this season. But the players who have allowed Inter to climb the table and be top of the table were players that Conte wanted. He wanted Lukaku even back in the Premier League. He's got him, and he's assembled a really unbeatable team, it feels like now.
Yeah, but here's a question, Matteo. What took them to overcoming Milan and getting first place is the one player that he didn't want, right? Eriksen?
Yeah, but
you see, this is the thing.
Like,
You're absolutely right about this. Like, he did fight for the players that he wanted, and he knows exactly how to get the best out of them. And one thing I will credit him for that he has over every other Italian manager is he is somebody who will make you fight to the heavens to get the result that you want. You will duel, you will battle, you will change your mentality when you work for Antonio Conte. And I agree with that. And I do think he knows how to identify the players that he wants, and he gets them right and they do their job. The thing with Antonio Conte is that I do think that sometimes he sort of is so disciplined and almost stubborn about the way that he has to play his style that he's not always open to these ideas. I just wonder how far they could have gone if Eriksen was included in this team setup a little bit earlier. And I don't mean in the Scudetto, because I think that, you know, either way it was theirs, considering the hideousness offered by, you know, their rivals, not Milan. But it is also a case of, you know, like in the Champions League, perhaps if you did have that quality in midfield where it's not just so easy to take Brozovic out of the game and then just rely on your physicality, it is kind of like his team right now is brilliant. And even Eriksen not playing the whole game, you can see the difference of what they produced against Torino. Him coming on, the fact that you have two ball players who understand how to make decisions in midfield makes all the difference. This is one thing that I've never seen him. He's very good at masking deficiencies within a squad. I don't think he's great in bringing out the qualities of a squad, the strengths or the intelligence on the ball that I think I covered so much when I watch a game. Having said all of that, this is a team, like you said, that continue to fight, that have a strong mentality, that at least are sticking to their identity and not trying to be anyone else, which is something that really right now we should applaud, because it seems no one does that other than Himden and Daversa and Parma, who got the win. But anyway, but it is about that. It is about the fact that he does something right now that is allowing this team to feel happy, to enjoy their football and to follow the instructions to the death and win. And they're managing it regardless of what they are producing.
So I think there's another way of looking at this, which is actually, this was put, I'm stealing someone else's thought here, really, but it was put to me by an inter journalist, I guess, this week, this thought that was it maybe the best thing that could happen to Inter that someone said, you can't buy anyone this January, because actually Conte, for what I feel like perhaps one thing he doesn't get enough credit for is actually when you tie one hand behind his back and say, those are the resources you've got, I think he's very good at drawing the best of the resources out of what he has. That's kind of what happened when he was in charge of the Italian national team. Not one person looked at that national team squad and thought that's a good Italy squad. That was one of the weakest Italy squads that there has been sent to an international tournament in a very long time. And he made it look okay. And I think that sometimes...
More than okay.
Great at masking deficiencies. Not,
I mean,
great,
there was
Pelé and Eder
up front. There was Giaccherini as a central midfielder. That Italy should have had nowhere near the success that they had.
And they were up against that Belgium that everyone was so excited about with Lukaku in it. Actually, was Lukaku in the team? I can't remember. It was certainly a good Belgium team now. But the job he's done that has been most impressive in the last bit has been getting the value out of those resources that were already there. Now, we are talking about, unlike with that Italy squad, some luxury problems. If the sort of rubbish that you've got sat in the back room is Christian Eriksen and Ivan Perisic, we're not exactly talking about what some of us have in the back of our freezers, are we? We're talking about some pretty serious top-level international footballers. But he has done it. And I think that, look, whatever else you feel about the team in a big picture way, I think that this win over Torino, which now feels like forever ago, because of course the football cycle is so fast, but the confidence of the Inter team to have that setback late in the second half and to come back and score a winning goal like that, something is different there, in my opinion, to what it has been in recent seasons. And Antonio Conte is the man in charge of that.
Yeah, just really quickly, the Perisic and Eriksen thing is interesting because we've actually praised Conte for kind of unearthing them in the system and finding a way, but it almost felt like a last resort. He was trying to sell Eriksen this summer. They just couldn't get any team to pay his 7.5 million euro wages. So he's like, right, we have to salvage this guy. It took him a year and a half, though. And for Perisic, it took even more than that because they sent him to loan on Bayern, where he just happened to win a treble, by the way, after Conte, based on a few ICC games, determined that Perisic couldn't play as a left wing back or a second striker. And now Perisic is actually looking like a really dangerous left wing back in a Conte system. So, yeah, we've praised him, but I don't know how much of this praise is actually merited.
Well, this is what I'm saying. I'm saying, you know, this is exactly what it is. I do think to a certain level, like, you know, I think Torino did so well in condensing the space and making sure that they were tight and compact, giving nothing to Inter to actually do. And this is where I tell you, where's your plan B? And this is why you need another ball player in your midfield. And he should have introduced Eriksen a long time ago. You know, if you don't want to play him, that's fine, but make sure your plan A is good enough to overcome teams, which they weren't. And he insists on, he loves Vidal, you know, Gagliardini and Vidal, they can't offer the team what they need sometimes, you know, which is that ability to overcome certain defenses. And I just feel like, you know, he wanted Ashley Young and Victor Moses and all these types of players. And I just look at them and I just think, you know, he's the one that wanted Kolarov as well. And I think at the end of the day, it's the quality players that make the difference. And I'm not always sure that he knows how to take out those qualities, but I do think he knows how to make the most of a bad bunch. But he'll walk out on you like he walked out on Chelsea, he walked out on Juve when he doesn't think the team's good enough. So yeah, he'll stick with it for a year, but you know, you've got to give him.
Well, there was a sit down last summer, yeah, wasn't there, to see if Conte would stay or not, and then he was convinced, but this it feels like this happens any time that doesn't exactly get his way. Obviously, it won't happen this summer, assuming Inter win the Scudetto, unless there's a crazy late meltdown.
I think that obviously is doing a lot of work in that sentence. I'm not sure it's obvious. I think we'll see. I would love to see the next season of Conte at Inter personally, because this is always the thing when we talk about the European competitions. I think that timing is huge in European competitions, and you can be playing very different football at different points of a season. I think Inter right now are playing much better football than they were in the fall, in the winter. So it would have been interesting to see what this version of Inter would have looked like in Europe. Now, next season, there'll be a chance for a fresh start. And I would want to see if this Inter can produce its best football in Europe, because of course I'm taking a few steps ahead here for someone who said that I don't think the title race is done, but if they win the league, that is of course the next step. We need to see it, but we are getting ahead of ourselves on that for sure. I'm getting ahead of myself.
Can we address the elephant in the room really quickly? There's an elephant in the room which is pretty sizable, and that's something that hasn't really creeped into Inter's play this season. It's the whole situation financially with Suning and how that's affected other Suning teams in China. And it's almost like no one's really talking about it, maybe even nearly as much as people should.
I wonder if that's quite deliberate. The club is doing its best to not talk about it because they're trying to not destabilize what they have going on.
It remains to be seen in the summer if this is, whether they can bring in what players they can, and if they can hold on to certain players if they do get, people trying to buy them. So it is going to be interesting to see what will happen over the summer, but I'm more interested in seeing how this team develops, because I think that when it comes to actually overcoming the first stage, Inter doing really well and 8 wins in a row now, they keep going regardless of whatever team you put in front of them. So I want to see how far this goes, but I'm really excited to see who they buy in the transfer market or what they can do in the transfer market, because I want to see next season even more.
And the shock of the round happened with Parma against Roma. 17 rounds winless for Parma, ended with a surprise 2-0 win over Roma. And they didn't blow their 2-goal lead like they have two other times in the last month. So things are getting interesting down at the bottom. But as for Roma, there's an interesting report coming out in the Italian Corriere dello Sport talking about Champions League and Roma and Paolo Fonseca. And the article stated that if finishing in the top four, that will determine whether Paolo Fonseca keeps his job or not. Fonseca has stressed that his team are improving. The report also went on to claim that Fonseca's contract automatically renews if Roma finish in the top four in the league. Is this even fair for Paolo Fonseca, who's been, I think, steadily throughout the season, one of our favorites here on Serie Awesome?
Well, no, obviously not. But I think that, there's a lot of delusions of grandeur apparently in Roma there. And they think that their squad is good enough to compete with the likes of Inter and Juventus and teams that are playing in the Champions League, from Atalanta to, of course, Milan. At the end of the day, Milan has invested a lot of money and time in trying to create this project, and they have succeeded because of it. And they also have invested a lot of money in bringing the likes of Ibrahimovic and a lot of squad depth in the attacking positions. So if you think your team with Mkhitaryan and Pedro are good enough, behind Dzeko, who, is 35 at the end of the day. And yes, I mean, Ibra is old and Ronaldo is old too, but he's not on that level. I'm sorry. Like, at the end of the day, he is injured a lot. And this is a team that has one striker and Mayoral is your second option. If you think that team is good enough to make top four, then good on you. But you can employ Allegri, you can employ Fabio, you could have a whole team. At the end of the day, squads make a difference. And you are a team that has changed presidencies, that has had a lot of, difference in the way that it was run before to the way that it is now. And I look at the defense and there is a lot of naivety there. There needs to be, Smalling hasn't been available. There has been absences. Zaniolo hasn't been there. They've changed from a young squad to a slightly older one. Time is required. And when you see that performance against Shakhtar, and the fact is they can do wonderful things. You can't just base your conclusions on, they haven't beaten a lot of big squads this season. And actually, this team is good enough to make top four. Who is your competition? do you have enough of, do you have the same of what they have? No. So how dare you demand these things of your team?
I agree that when I look at the squad, I think it's not of the same quality of some of the teams they're up against. I think if you look at player for player, Roma and Napoli, which of those two squads do you think should be in the top four? It's Napoli. It's not really close. You're looking at some really sort of high caliber international footballers like Zielinski, like Insigne, like Osimhen, who you spent all that money on, like Dries Mertens, like Koulibaly. You've got one squad that looks built for this, and you've got one squad that's kind of this mix of odd mix, actually, of young optimism. And there are some players there to feel really good about. Pellegrini's done a lot of work this season, but he's a good player. Mancini, I think, is on a good path again as well. I think there's some stuff to really like there, but it does feel very hodgepodge still. And there's some really odd players in there as well. I mean, obviously there's the obvious one, El Shaarawy, who talks about coming back, which feels like this weird sort of desire to bring back some past that maybe was never there. I think even sometimes you look at a player like Bruno Perez and you think, is this still where you want to be? And look, even Edin Dzeko, who they could and would have liked to cash in on this last summer, hasn't been anywhere near his best for this club this season. Obviously, there's been a pretty huge absence all season in Zaniolo, but yeah, look, this was a really bad result. Losing to Parma, it's a really bad result to lose to a team that hasn't lost in half a season practically. Sorry, that hasn't won in half a season practically. I don't think that Fonseca is without blame, because they really have been really, like, to not be any of those teams in the top part of the table has been pretty disappointing as well. But I agree with your broad point. The squad, player for player, is not as good as the teams it's trying to beat to get into the top four.
That's the biggest issue, right? Because if you were expected, if you had the squad of Juventus or Inter and you finish outside the top four, that's a disaster. You can maybe even make the case for Napoli, who I think is easily the third side in terms of overall quality and depth. And then you just have this second tier of Roma, Lazio, Atalanta, Milan. I mean, four teams competing for one spot. So it's not like this bang-on, clear certainty that Roma have to be a top four team. And they're still in the Europa League. They can still win the Europa League and get into the Champions League via that route. So maybe they would still activate this clause in Fonseca's contract. But yeah, Nicolò Zaniolo is one of their most dynamic players and one of the best young players in Italy. Not having him for basically 18 months is a huge deal. There's this weird mix of players that are in their twilight and young players that were brought in. I mean, you even saw Brian Reynolds, the wingback from FC Dallas, making his debut, which is great news for the U.S. national team. Another American playing in one of the top five European leagues. But there's a lot of players that are still trying to find their way and trying to build the chemistry. And I think that with all these things considered, Paulo Fonseca has actually done a really good job in creating this really fun, entertaining team when they're at their best. He's gotten the best out of Henrik Mkhitaryan, which we haven't seen this version of him maybe even since his days in the Bundesliga. So I think there's still plenty of reasons to praise Paulo Fonseca.
But I just also want to mention that, you know, like you were talking about Milan. I mean, Milan still have Donnarumma at the back. You know, they still have Kessier and Bennacer, who won, you know, best player in the African Cup of Nations. Kessier, who came in for a lot of money from Atalanta, you know, Ibrahimovic. I mean, Milan has a much better squad. Napoli has a much better squad. For me, I look at Roma squad and I look at Sassuolo, and frankly speaking, I'd be tackling De Zerbi because they should be on that same level as Roma. You know, like I look at, you know, Caputo up front, Juricic, Locatelli in midfield, Berardi up front, and Kirikesh has had a good season at the back. Like, I don't look at that squad as being too different from where Roma are at the moment in time. But it's also about the fact that, you know, Parma deserve a lot of credit because they do have a coach that they have brought back who has a style of play, who has always done really well with the players that he has available to him. They are a dynamic team. They are a very vertical and direct side. And you know what they have? They have cojones. You know, something that I think Roma and Fonseca need to sort of, you know, maybe learn a little, because it's constant passing the ball. There needs to be someone at some point that just shoots. And Roma have this problem a lot of the times, especially when they're tired. They just keep possession for the sake of it. And that needs to change because they get very hit by teams that know how to play direct football. That happened in the derby against Lazio, and it happened against Parma. But I'm thrilled, thrilled for Davessa because he should have been there from the start, and I swear they wouldn't be fighting relegation.
So we always talk about the top of the table and teams fighting for Europe, but there's quite a little bit of a situation brewing in the relegation zone. Parma, who beat Roma and picked up 3 points, they were leading also 2-0 in two other games in the last month and ended up drawing 2-2. I thought they played well against Inter, losing 2-1, but really held their own. You have Torino that made a managerial switch, and it seemed like things were turning around until half their team was wiped out with COVID in the last 10 days. So you look at the table and you're starting to see a pattern. You're starting to see Spezia and Benevento maybe slowing down from what we saw in the first half of the season. Are those the two teams that are going to get dragged right into the thick of this relegation zone? Can Torino and Parma both save themselves? Or do we think that one of those teams is absolutely going down to Serie B with Crotone, who I think is the one team that we all agree is almost certainly going down to Serie B?
Do we agree? I know Mina's quickly hopped onto the Serie Cosmi bandwagon since we we're being cruel about him the other week. I think those two teams you mentioned, Spezia and Benevento, are the ones who need to be starting to worry. I think Torino are fascinating, actually, because Nicola came in, and I think all of us, certainly I on this podcast, was pretty high on that appointment. Like, I liked him. And the wins took a while to come. And even as recently as midway through this game against Sassuolo the other day, you think, all right, there've been some good performances, but they mostly keep losing and drawing, and they haven't got those wins. And then they come back and dig out a 3-2 win in a game which they looked out of. And you see there's still fight there, which is obviously the first thing you need after talent, which they have in abundance. So I think Torino, well, I won't say the too good to go down thing because it's such a cliche and it's always wrong when you say it, but they are a team that should have higher expectations. The rest of that group, I think it's going to be really tight. Davessa, yes, he's won a game, but you need to win a lot more than one game now if you're Parma, and they hadn't won for a very long time before this. Those two teams, Spezia and Benevento, have both been throwing away points, and quality-wise, again, if we're going to talk player for player, they are weaker than the teams below them, I think, bluntly. But yeah, that doesn't always play out. And the closer we get to the end of the season, the less time you have to fix it.
And Mina, we have this new evergreen segment now to end shows, and that is our favorite, Serse Cosmi Watch. So what is your Cosmi-ism this week? Do you have any?
Feel like, you know, like we were saying, oh, Semplici, like, you understand Cagliari making that, you know, like, decision for Crotone, really? I mean, your team's losing anyway. And then he starts actually scoring goals and they don't look like they're so mentally fragile. And I'm like, maybe all the stuff that you were reporting about them watching porn before games is actually helping them. I don't know. I mean, they're not, it's not like they've started winning or everything, but, you know, and dominating the league by any stretch. But I have to say, they look a little bit more confident when you watch them play. So maybe Cosmi, maybe we were, like Nikki said, a bit too cruel about him.
Look, who are we to question Serse Cosmi's genius? Maybe he's just this untapped resource of you know, this new wave of philosopher who's always been there, but just hasn't been paid attention to nearly enough. So did get his Crotone to score 4 goals in a round, which is unbelievable. So yeah, we are all on the Serse Cosmi bandwagon. There's still plenty of room for everyone else to join in. Right, so final takeaways, Nikki.
I don't know what the final takeaways are, other than that everything's finally poised. Definitely a big week, this one, given that Inter aren't playing, given that we're heading into the international break. This is a big week for anyone who still wants to put pressure on them in that title race. Honestly, I think that's mostly just Juventus at this point, if I'm being totally frank. I think Juventus is the team that still has a chance to compete with Inter for the title. I think Milan might have lost their moment now, but this is the time to do it. And for everyone else, watch Roma Napoli this weekend. Big game on Sunday night on ESPN. So check that out.
Huge game, and what a season it's been in Serie A. Pretty poised to finish as a wild ride like always, whether it's the bottom of the table or the top. There's still plenty of things to fight for. For Mina, for Nikki, I'm Matteo. Ciao for now.